Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
When you get the opportunity to talk to somebody that's got such a varied background in terms of their birthplace and where they qualify and where they are now, it's a really rich mix, isn't it?
It is, and a very, very varied background. Makes you realise that sometimes you think, oh, my life has been a bit closeted. You know, what is that? I was born in Harrow. I grew up in Harrow. I was educated in Harrow.
But also just, and I wonder whether that international experience also flavours his broad outlook in looking for opportunities, and now someone who's deep in digital dentistry and really at the forefront of where things are going.
I also love the fact that he speaks, what is it, four languages, maybe five languages, and then because he's been in Newcastle for 5 years, there are words that are definitely Geordie.
Yeah.
There must be some sort of natural for people who learn languages. I don't know. He's a nice guy.
You just really adopt it. It was really good. It was really good.
And it'll be unknown to most people.
That's right,
which I think is what makes it super interesting.
Somebody well worth listening to. Well worth listening to. It was great. So when we started doing this, who would have thought 120 plus episodes later, we'd still be doing an episode a week?
Yeah, amazing, really. And also continuing to meet new people.
Yeah.
Sometimes you think you might have to recycle, but the answer is we're meeting new people, which is fascinating.
And also I think it just goes to serve that dentistry is a interesting profession full of interesting people, but constantly changing and evolving and new people coming in all the time.
Definitely life changes, dentistry changes, and got another changing chat today.
We do. So ladies and gentlemen, today we are joined by Dr. George Dandenoff, and George is a dentist and also founder of the Smile Wide Lab, which was a lockdown project which we're looking forward to finding out about.
A lockdown project.
Absolutely. Well, I think most of us cook banana bread and George developed a new business. Yeah. So I'm feeling a bit inferior start. But there we go. Hiya, George, how are you doing?
Hello, Chris. Hello, Andy. How are you?
We are very good. Thank you very much. Yeah. Looking forward to this.
Thank you for having me.
No, not at all. Looking forward to it. It's exciting. And it's interesting, the thing we were just saying about how dentistry keeps changing. And we'll come on and talk about this business that you kind of curated through lockdown. But this...
Curated. I like curated.
Yeah. Missed opportunity there. But if you look back, no more than 5-7 years, some of the things that are happening in dentistry, it just wasn't possible. You know, we didn't have the technology, we didn't have the systems and processes. And whilst COVID was a terrible time, it certainly did accelerate some of those advancements that have been kind of there in the background but hadn't really come to the forefront. So it'll be interesting to find out from you how that came. But before we start, you're a very interesting character for me, because you were born in Bulgaria, you qualified as a dentist in Ukraine, and now you're with us in the UK. So just give us a sense of, for you, where feels like home?
Yeah, and family and all that sort of stuff.
I think, well, that's a difficult question. I think home is where friends and family is. Home for me at the moment is everywhere. It is in Ukraine, it is in Bulgaria, and it is in England as well, Do you have a lot of friends everywhere? My family is still in Bulgaria. My lovely wife is here with me. Have quite a lot of friends here as well. So I can't really choose one place.
Which is a lovely answer, because you're right. I think it is. It's where you feel comfortable and where you have connections, which is kind of what you've said. Going back to your early years, you were brought up in Bulgaria, were you?
Yes, well, I was born and I grew up in a city on the seaside of Bulgaria. Quite a nice city, nice weather.
I went on holiday to Bulgaria once.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't remember where it was, though. It was a while ago.
I did grow in the age where the internet and then digital wasn't that popular yet. So I think that my childhood was quite nice. I was still able to spend lots of time outside, play with other kids, which was great. I started working quite early age, well, working is a big word, probably started helping my grandparents a lot, or they were just trying to keep me busy. I did help my granddad with his business a lot, which told me quite a lot of stuff about earning money, basically.
What business was he in, George?
He was in construction. He was doing a lot of windows, doors, and things like that. So, well, work with hands mainly, which was quite nice. I did like it, and it told me to, well, how you really earn money, and then further down how you spend them.
Which bit did you enjoy more?
Well, spending them, but when you spend your own money, I think this is something that when I was a kid, I didn't understand that. When now I do completely, and I'm very grateful for it. But when I was a kid, most kids were just given money when I had to deserve mine with something. So it was either grades or some help, and this is the money you spent. So the money you. The way you spend the money you've earned is a bit different than
I think you're right. I think you do value things very differently. Ownership, if something's just given to you, there isn't the same value. But that's a great lesson to learn quite young in life, isn't it? That if you work for something, you don't want to frit it away. You don't want to spend that money with no real purpose.
Well, that never stopped me to spend them with no real purpose. But it is. It does. It does teach you a lot of things. I didn't understand that when I was a kid, but I'm really, really grateful for it now. It helped a lot, especially during students' years. It was helpful.
Was it your grandfather's business? Did he own the business?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So you got some kind of insight to what it requires to be a business owner and an entrepreneur quite young too.
Well, I think so. Yes. He was a very hardworking person. And I think this is the main lesson I got from that age. Working hard.
It's amazing that impact, doesn't it, that family has on us. We don't even know it at the time, but
But great lessons to learn young. When did you decide that dentistry was for you? Was that quite a young age or a knee-jerk reaction?
Well, this was in high school. In high school, my last grade in last 2 years in high school, this is when I decided that I want to become a volunteer in Red Cross, which is when I actually met so many people that are into medicine and dentistry field, and so many people that are at the moment already in the field. I think this is when I found out that I like helping people, and I like that kind of help. I like medicine and dentistry. This is when I was certain that this will be the thing that I'll be doing, and I'm happy to do it until the rest of my life. This is the job.
Wow. Yeah. But we're sort of jumping forward quite a way here, but then when you qualified, you didn't see that delivering dentistry via the Red Cross was something for your future. It was just something that got you interested in the first instance.
Yes. Well, I was at the very beginning, I was still not certain that dentistry is what I would like to do. It was definitely medicine and dentistry. I love them both.
Right.
We do have family, friends who, well, the whole families that are dentists, and they helped with that choice. I still wasn't sure during the first year. So the first year I was still thinking of maybe switching to medicine. Right. As when I see how the project, how the studies go and everything, if I like it, and fortunately I did, and this is how it happened.
So how did you end up going to Ukraine? Did you study in Ukraine? Yeah, qualified dentist in Ukraine, didn't you?
I did.
So how was that sort of like? Oh, I'll just go somewhere else.
Well, I think when I. After seventh grade in school, we do have exams there, and I was lucky enough to get in a quite good high school where I was able to learn two languages. Well, I knew them. And after that, I understood I don't know them very well. but after 12th grade, I wanted to come to UK. I did want to come to UK. However, my parents weren't able to afford the cost of dentistry school here.
What, the education? Yeah, because it's really expensive, isn't it, for overseas residents, I think, yeah.
And the other option, I didn't want to stay in Bulgaria. I wanted to explore. I wanted to learn new things, meet new people. And this is how I choose Ukraine.
Wow. Excellent. I mean, could you have gone elsewhere? I mean, was it price or was it the fact of, oh, I quite fancy Ukraine? I mean, I'm intrigued as to, because I presume you could have gone anywhere, really.
Well, I could. It was mostly the language, because I knew Russian from high school.
Right.
And I told that it will be easier for me to study in it. So I studied in Russian for 2 years, and then I decided that I will switch to English.
Right.
But yeah, I think it was mostly cost and language.
Really. Wow. Yeah.
And when was this, George? When did you do your studies in Ukraine?
It was 2013. This is when I started.
Oh, wow.
2018, right. I graduated. Yeah, so it's when everything started in Ukraine. This is when I just moved.
So that was Crimea. That was
around the time, and what was your? I mean, it's obviously made the news a lot in the past kind of year 18 months with what's happening and continues to happen out there at the moment. But what was your experience like out there when you were studying?
Well, I loved it. So many people. I didn't feel that there is so many. Well, from a political point of view, what was going on? It wasn't that. We couldn't feel it there. I was in the other part of Ukraine, close to Poland.
Right. Okay.
It was normal. It was normal at that part of the years. Yeah.
I think one thing the war has done is it's definitely made the West realize how important Ukraine is. Mm. I don't think anybody had an idea of, like, you know,
raw materials.
Yeah, you know, what was it, microchips or sunflower oil or grain or whatever. And I think that I'm assuming, and I'm one of those people, we were just ignorant of the size of Ukraine for a start and what it actually produces. Vast, amazing.
And what was your dental school experience like? Is it a very hands-on course? Did you come out with lots of clinical experience? Is it quite theoretically based? In the UK, for context, we talk to dentists of different ages, and dentists that kind of qualified 20 years ago talk about, you know, the huge amount of clinical experience they got whilst at dental school, and they came out feeling very well equipped to treat patients. And lots of the younger dentists today talk about there's quite a lot of administration, risk assessment, and kind of the paper side of dentistry, and they don't probably feel they have as much clinical experience as they'd like.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree. It was same in my university. Most of the, well, we left the university very well prepared from the theoretical point of view, diagnostics, treatment planning, not that much in practical.
Right.
But yeah, I guess this is everywhere. And this is why you have your foundation here after that, I guess. But yeah, when I was in university, I did really want to have these clinical experience. I was nursing quite a lot when I was in university. After uni, I did, even in third grade in university, I bought my phantom head, my handpieces, and everything I needed at home. So I had my phantom class at home.
Cool, but that scared your friends when they came round.
which was quite helpful, and I do think that this is a huge benefit, and having access to that, it's great. It does help you to learn the theory better and easier when you do have much more practice.
Mm. And does your training finish the same as in the UK, where students kind of, you know, graduate into a foundation place in a practice where they apply their practical skills? Was that the same in Ukraine?
It was, yes. I did So usually in Ukraine, you have to pass 2 years of internship after that. So the foundation there is 2 years instead of one. But I was able to do that on my fourth and fifth grade in university. Right. So I was working right. with dentists already. Right. And then when I graduated, I didn't have to go through all of that. I did come to UK straight away.
Is it state funded? I mean, I have no idea about the Ukrainian dental system. Is it a bit like the UK, funded by the state and then private, or is it all funded by the state? Because you sort of think maybe there's some Soviet hangovers or something like that. Mm. I don't know.
I think it's funded by the state and private as well.
Right.
So a similar combination to our setup. And you say that you qualified and you then came straight to the UK, did you? As soon as you qualified.
Yes, that's right. So I did. When I graduated, I was very tired of being dependent from my parents. So I went to Bulgaria. I thanked them so much for what they've done for me. Told them that this is it. The only thing I need is one-way plane ticket to London, and then I will do my way after. So I came to England with pretty much nothing.
And did you come with a one-way ticket?
I came with one-way ticket. And
did you have any? Did you come with any friends, George?
That's confidence.
Yes. So when in high school, quite a lot of my friends moved to England, and during my second grade in university, I came to visit a friend of mine, which actually turned my life around quite much, because this is when I met my lovely wife, which I followed after that. So when I graduated, I came with one-way ticket, yes, and I was lucky enough to be able to find a job very quickly. And I had a place to stay. So this is how everything happened.
Having a friendly person to meet you at the airport and when you're going to a new country must have felt truly wonderful that you weren't on your own.
It is. It's a huge plus.
Yeah.
And especially you're a stalker to your wife.
And where did you land when you came to England? Where did you land and where did you settle?
London. I landed to London and we traveled to Newcastle the same day I was working.
Oh, wow.
The day after I was at work, my first shift at work was the day after I landed.
You know there's nearer airports to Newcastle than London.
I know. There were no tickets.
But mind you get to see the whole length of the country, which is nice in itself.
How long have you been in Newcastle, George?
I've been in Newcastle about 5 years now.
Because there's a certain hint of certain words that you say. You've got a hint of Geordie going on there, my friend. You did it then with Newcastle.
Yeah.
Newcastle. And there was something else you said earlier on. Yeah. It was like, the man is picking up because we know you speak loads of languages.
Yeah.
So it's like you're obviously a bit like an amoeba or sponge of accents. It's fascinating.
So was your friend working and based in Newcastle? Is that why you ended up there? Yeah.
Yes. So he came here after high school and, he pretty much settled here. So he had a job.
Anything to do with dentistry or not at all?
No. So when I came, before I got through the whole GDC registration process, I used to work for about 6 months to a year. I was working in a restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Yes, until I get everything settled I was looking for places where I can start shadowing or just being there.
Is that how long they took to get your registration through?
Over a year.
Mm. And how did that feel for you as somebody who's highly skilled and a qualified medical professional, having to wait to use that skill and work in a restaurant?
That?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. But it was worth it. I met lots of people there. I did pick up a bit of an accent. I learned a bit of the language a bit better in order to be able to communicate in dentistry which is
quite important. That's very true, isn't it? That is very true. Just thinking about it, if you spend a year being in a restaurant, you are going to be talking to loads of people and improving your language skills and the colloquialisms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, well, after high school, you think you know language. I told that I know, well, both languages fluently. Mm-hmm. When I moved to Ukraine, I found out that I don't. Then when I moved to England, I found out that I don't. So you do need a little bit of, I agree, you do need a little bit of transition to get it smooth. So when you start working with patients, you understand them well and they understand them well.
Yeah.
You don't use lots of terminology and confusing them, but you use
the language that they will
understand. So the day came where you were able to put down the menus and pick up the hand pieces. So what sort of practice are you working in Newcastle?
I work in a fully private practice in Newcastle. We do quite a lot of dentistry. A lot of the protocols we're using now are digital, which wasn't fully like that when I first started. When I came to England, I wanted to switch from the restaurants and go to a dental practice. So I wrote emails and I sent them to every single dental practice in the area where I can go. And only one practice answered back and invited me to have a chat. And this is how I met the principal of the practice. And he offered me to shadow, just come watch, spend time with the team, see how everything works, which was great experience for me.
Yeah.
I was able to learn how the private dentistry workflow is built in the UK before I got my GDC number. And then
that's
it was
brilliant, isn't it?
again easier. I was able to spend, so the practice I'm working in, they do have a lab, indoor lab as well, where I was able to spend a lot of time in, learn a lot about digital. When I started working, they just bought their first software for orthodontic digital treatment plannings.
Right.
And we were still learning all that.
Wow.
Which I loved it. I was there before work, after work, all the time, just to learn how it works. So, that helped us a lot to move then to quite a lot of our workflow is digital at the moment.
And were you instrumental in digitizing the practice? You say when you got there, it wasn't, you know, digital to the extent it is, perhaps, you know, workflows and some of the technology. Were you part of that kind of pushing that forward?
I don't think so. I think I was lucky enough to be in the right place in the right moment. Right. I never thought that so quickly after university I will be able to start working with with fully digital workflow and learn so much about it. I knew that I want to do that, but I always thought that it will be years before I start actually working with it.
Wow.
And luckily enough, the principal was quite open-minded to getting everything digital.
Brilliant.
And I was just in the
that's very
the right
front
place
foot, really,
in the
you
right
think about it, isn't it? Very front foot in those. Because what that be? That would be about 20. When was that?
That was 2019.
Yeah, so quite front foot, really.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and great timing for you.
Expensive. Sorry, I was just thinking it was probably really expensive at the time to do, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Prices have come down, but at that time, it's probably a big old investment of time and cash.
But then also for you, timing couldn't have been better to get that exposure and ignite that fire inside you, because just around the corner was COVID. And then during COVID, you started Smile Wide Lab, which is a clear aligner treatment planning service for dentists. If you hadn't kind of connected with that practice at that time and possibly the downtime during COVID, not being able to work, it may be that didn't happen. And was that something that you saw as an opportunity in conjunction with the practice, or was it just something independently that you just saw as an opportunity?
I think SmileWise started when I was lucky enough to to go to digital so soon, and I had lots of friends who wanted to get involved into it. And this is when the idea came to be able to help young clinicians to actually start using the digital workflow, helping them with their plannings and reducing the amount of mistakes they do during the planning because of the digital workflow. So they can actually see what is possible. They can discuss that with patients, manage patient expectations, especially in the young age of dentistry. It is quite difficult to do. And digital dentistry helps with all of that.
And in terms of the service that you offer, what are the benefits to clinicians in using that? Is, I imagine it's not just a time-saving tool. There's other benefits as a result that come through that.
I mean, what is it, I suppose, really? What actually is it?
So what we do is we do help clinicians with their clear aligner treatment planning, clear aligner and fixed brace. We do a bit of prosthodontics as well, but we mainly specialize in ortho. What we do is we build up a team around a practice that wants to start manufacturing their own clear aligners. So we can help them to start printing. We can help with materials based on our experience, what works with us. We can help with manufacturing of them. We do help them with planning and the delivery of the aligner therapy. So when you do start with clear aligners, there are lots of questions like how you place attachments, how attachments work, what attachments to place when, how to do IPR, when we do it, and all of these questions, which it's quite valuable. I think that I would really appreciate it if I had someone guide me through that whole workflow when I was starting. And we spent lots of time on different courses. I think I've watched pretty much every clear aligner course possibly you can possibly watch. And that helped us a lot. And what we do now is we're just spreading it. We help other people to begin their clear aligner journey. And if they have the opportunity to start manufacturing their own aligners, that's also amazing because that reduces the cost of, practice pays, which reflects on the cost that patients pays and patients can afford the orthodontic treatments easier.
It's a bit like that. It's in a way, it's that when we went to that Dentorama thing, that's that sort of ortho, the bloke who did the ortho but didn't quite work out.
Yeah,
because he hadn't done it, so you're sort of stepping in before he makes the mistakes to say, hey, this is how we're going to help you with your treatment planning so you don't make those mistakes.
Plan it well.
Yes, well, what we do is we do have one-on-one sessions with them, so every dentist who never done it before can easily just jump on a quick call with any of us.
That's good.
And we can guide them through the whole procedure, answer all of their questions, and tell them possible mistakes that we've made, so they can learn from our mistakes instead of doing their own.
Yeah, and you say about manufacturing your own aligners. In the time you've been involved in this business, have you seen a shift towards more practices looking to manufacture their own aligners as opposed to buying them in? There's obviously the very well-known clear aligner business, and there's other clear aligners available as well. But from a profitability point of view, obviously, if you're able to manufacture yourself in-house, you know, arguably perhaps it's quicker, but it's also going to be lower cost. Given the pressure on profitability for some practices, is there a shift towards manufacturing their own aligners in-house?
I think so. Most of the practices which have space indoor to make a lab, to turn the space into a lab, they can't do that because the investment needed isn't huge. You just need a 3D printer and you need a vacuum former, and that's it. Then you can trim your aligners and polish them, and that's all. The only other thing you need is your digital treatment plan. which takes a little bit longer to learn. But yeah, this is what we help with. And when you do have all of the files, you can see everything. You can ask for help if you have any questions. It makes the whole workflow more flexible.
Someone over your shoulder must be great, mustn't it?
Oh yeah.
It makes it much more flexible because there are patients who lose their aligners, they crack, or anything happens, and they need a new one. And if you are not able to manufacture it, and depending on which company you use for manufacturing, sometimes that could take weeks for the new aligners to come. Man. And when you do have that in house, you make it in minutes.
Mm-hmm. And I assume the practice you work in has this ability to produce them in house.
Yes, yeah, we do our own clear aligners.
Right. Wow, good.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, you've probably only got to go back to 2018, 2019, or perhaps 2018, where that just wasn't a viable option. Whereas now that's kind of the future. And I mean, you're still relatively young in terms of the years you had ahead of you in dentistry. But in terms of the digital dentistry revolution that we're slap bang in the middle of, it's exploding. Where do you see it going in the future? Over the perhaps next 5 years, but even further out. How do you see that digital dentistry is going to revolutionize the sector?
I think digital dentistry is the present, really, and it will be the future. It will keep developing in all the aspects, not only orthodontics. In what we see now, softwares that help with X-ray readings, softwares that help with notes taking. We do see a lot of softwares that help us with prosthodontic treatment planning, orthodontic treatment planning as well. I do still think that analog dentistry has its place. However, in the next 5, 10, 15 years, the digital dentistry will keep develop and will probably become the new normal.
And for someone who's keeping quite close to kind of tech generally, are there new innovations coming down the line that we don't even really know about yet? Is there some crazy things that are going to really turn dentistry on its head?
I think artificial intelligence gets into it a lot, and that will probably start changing a lot. I do still trust people more than artificial intelligence, so I wouldn't, when that comes, because there are already some softwares and scanners who can quickly design you a crown or your setup for aligners. It will probably come to that point at some time, but it's not there yet. And I do still like to check everything myself before it goes to manufacture and then to patient.
Yeah. But is that just a matter of time? I'm thinking about something like Pearl, which kind of has a tagline, kind of the second opinion, where cases have been put through Pearl and they found issues with the dentistry that weren't spotted by the dentist. Is it a case of, as the data starts to build and more data becomes available to these super machines,
I think so.
They'll get to a point when they'll almost be as good as humans?
Yes, I do think so. Which is great from one side and quite sad from the other, because that just removes people from dentistry. So
I suppose it removes opinion and produces consistency, isn't it? Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. Hopefully.
But then I think the flip side to it is, we were talking to a dentist earlier and she made a very valid point that the relationship you have with your dentist is very intimate. Very few people get as close to you as your dentist does. And I think replacing that by a machine is quite a difficult thing to do. And there is still a highly aesthetic element to dentistry. Even if it's not aesthetics dentistry, it still needs to look right and fit. The point of that is that it kind of has to fit that individual patient as opposed to fit some data norms. because data might say it should look like this. But actually, if my smile has always been slightly wonky,
little imperfections,
but, yeah,
isn't
but,
it?
But yeah, that's great. The way I want it. That needs to be incorporated. So taking it down to the minutiae level might be incredibly difficult, which is where I think the dentist as a clinical expert will be needed.
I agree.
Absolutely, yeah. And well, I think that it will be very helpful with diagnostics.
Mm. Yes,
it will. I'm not sure about performance.
I think that some robot having a go in my mouth. Do you?
Yeah.
No.
I think people will. Well, people won't be. I don't know. I won't be happy for a robot to do my extraction or my filling or my implant. I will trust much more a person.
Mm.
Yeah. And is are you looking at the digital revolution globally as well? Do you have insights in terms of what's happening in the US or other countries as well to get a feeling for where we sit in the UK?
I think we're on the same page, mostly. I think more in US, it's more popular. There are more people who use it, but it's very quickly growing in the UK. Mm.
Right, yeah, which is exciting. And for you, I imagine it's nice because you're able to apply all the things you're learning, you're able to apply in real time in the practice, working in a private practice in a you know, a great and large city like Newcastle. You'll get access to patients that you can you know, work with this stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, it's amazing seeing the results and how the plan you do on the screen works in the mouth. It's brilliant. And the other thing, it helps you to study mistakes if there are any. So in clear aligner therapy, so not always when you fit the aligners, all of them work from the same time. Sometimes for some reasons they don't, and the digital workflow helps you to find out why it didn't, see where the mistake was done, see how much the teeth moved and where they stopped moving, and with the time that, well, you just learn from these mistakes and you improve the process every day. Mm. And this is how we ended up here. I think when I was starting in the practice I'm working at the moment, 95% of the orthodontic patients were treated with fixed brace.
Right.
When now 90% of them are in clear aligners.
That's a big shift.
Mm, massive.
It is.
Big shift.
It is, because most of the people want, and this is not all of the patients, but a lot of the patients want to have straight teeth. They don't want to wear a brace.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think we've become quite a vain nation. Yeah. And I think also, you know, the money that Align have pushed into their brand Invisalign, it's become common language. You know, people now, they don't necessarily talk in, you know, patients don't think of or talk about clear aligners. They talk about Invisalign because it's just become that word that's synonymous with clear braces. And it's great in many ways because it's educated a generation in terms of what's available. And I imagine your system as well, from a profitability point of view for the practices, it's a relatively low cost system to deliver to patients. So it's good for the financials of the practice as well.
It's great for the practices because they're flexible with everything. They are under control of every single step of the treatment of the patient. There are many other devices that the clinicians can use for monitoring the patients as well. So we work with dental monitoring as well.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which is great additional help to your clear aligner therapy. It reduces the amount of ortho reviews significantly, and you do see the patients when they need to be seen.
Yeah,
because they work with artificial intelligence as well. So when you do when the software spots something, it tells you, and then this is when you see the patient instead of bringing them every couple of weeks for reviews.
Yeah,
which reduces the clinical time of all of the clinicians as well, and this way they can improve the quality of dental care they provide for their patients and reduce the time, so they can actually help more people in the same time.
But also, I think the environmental impact. We were talking to a hygienist, and she was saying that one of the biggest environmental impacts in dentistry is patients travelling to and from the practice. So by using some of the tools that dental monitoring have available, if that reduces the number of visits to the practice, for an environmental point of view, it's great.
Save the planet.
Because, well, yeah, I mean, traveling around, you know, to and fro, pollutes. You know, regardless of how you get around, and, you know, unless you walk and take a bicycle, which most people don't, there's an impact on the planet. So by reducing that, you know, it's good from an environmental point of view, and it adds to profitability. So it's definitely ticking all the boxes.
Mm. Absolutely. The other plus from an environmental point of view is that you don't need to store any of your lab work because you have it on a digital file. Yeah. You do have it all on your computer and you have access to it every second.
Yeah, paper, I suppose, that sort of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a part of what we do, we value dental practices. Not so much now, but it used to be years ago, if you went to practices that were orthodontics, you'd have these brown boxes of models, yes, and there'd be rooms. Sometimes in a large practice, you might have two rooms dedicated to these models. And you're right, now you're just looking at, you know, digital files, and you can pull that up. You can print a replacement aligner at a moment's notice, which has never been able to do that before.
No, it's brilliant.
Absolutely, yeah. You have a folder on your computer with all of the files, rooms. Yeah.
Just hope you don't misfile it.
Exactly. It's fascinating, Georgia. I think it's a really exciting time, and I think, you know, what you're doing, just it makes digital dentistry more accessible. I think one of the things that you know, people are fearful of is kind of change and embracing new technology. But it sounds to me like you're offering a system and a structure to give people that peace of mind that they can do this with an experienced arm around their shoulder. And then in time, they can then go and run and do that themselves and perhaps not need that support. Yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely. Digital gives them the chance to make as many mistakes as they want on the screen instead of making them in patient's mouth.
In the mouth.
So you can study all of the different possibilities and different solutions of how you can manage patients' expectations. And then you can always bring them back in and tell them, look, this is what we discussed last time. This is the plan that I've done. Do you have a couple of treatment options? This is how we expect the treatment to go. And this way you give really all of the information to patients and they can really take an informed decision. When in past, when a patient comes to an orthodontist, they say, I want straight teeth. Yeah. And the orthodontist tells them, well, okay. And in the end of the treatment, maybe the smile, but maybe when the teeth are straight, that's not what the patient wanted. And there are many cases when the patients say, well, I actually don't like the shape of my teeth, not the position. And all of that can be avoided.
Yes.
With digital.
True.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Cool.
Fascinating.
Excellent.
George, we always finish up the same way. So you've got two questions. I know you've listened to some of our previous podcasts. So you know what's coming.
The first,
all of them, I have.
That would be a bold man. The first question is, if you could be the fly on a wall in a situation, where would that be and who'd be there?
I think that was a very difficult question. I was thinking about it a lot and I decided to go back in history. What I wanted is, if I could be a fly on the wall, I would be in the room when during the Second World War they broke the Nazis' code. They broke the code, and when they did that, what happened in that room? How did everybody react on that? That would be the emotion there, and then starting reading and understanding all of the notes that they're sending to each other.
That would be fascinating. Do you know of Bletchley Park in England?
I don't know.
It's quite near to Milton Keynes, but Bletchley Park is where they cracked the code. That was where they had the Enigma machine, and it's actually open. It's a visitor centre. So if you're interested in that, it's probably well worth a trip down there, and you get to see all the huts and all the buildings that were used and all the work that went on in the background to try and crack that code. But yes. Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see it on the other side of the fence and that dawning realisation that they've no longer got the upper hand.
Absolutely, yeah. That sounds like my next trip.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, Bletchley Park, but fascinating place. And our follow-up question is, if you could meet somebody, if you were given the opportunity to sit down and have a cup of tea or a bottle of beer with somebody, who would that be?
I think that person will be Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn is an entrepreneur, American. I don't know if you heard about him. He's a great motivational speaker, talks about personal development a lot. I think that this will be the person that I would like to definitely have a cup of coffee or a pint.
brilliant
excellent.
George, it's been wonderful. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
I feel we've caught you at the right time, because I think you're with us in Newcastle. It's digital dentistry starting to explode. You brought that kind of international experience, and you're working in an exciting part of dentistry, and also trying to kind of support other dentists so that we all get there. Mm. We all get there together. And I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure to have a chat with you.
Good.
Likewise. Well, look after yourself and hope to see you soon.
Enjoy. Thank you. See you soon.
YI, as they say.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.